This week on Retronauts.
Oh my God!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Retronauts Advance. Is that what we're calling it now?
I think it was just Retronauts.
Retronauts, okay.
Ray is already turning
Ray. Well,
Super
Ray.
Retronauts?
We're back to just being Retronauts, I guess, but our smaller episodes are just called Retronauts Pocket then?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay.
Retronauts Junior.
So the name device doesn't make a lot of sense anymore, but...
Can you tell we haven't launched yet?
Yeah. We're still recording these before the launch. We're building up a kind of a backlog, but here we are in the prestigious Retronauts vault.
Yes.
We hope that oxygen can come through that door in some way, because there are four of us in this very tiny room. But let me go around the room and...
Geraldo Rivera can come find us.
It'd be better than what they originally found in Al Capone's vault. You know, four nerds.
What, cows?
This vault is full of nerds. They're not worth anything. Okay, let's go around the room and introduce ourselves. We've already talked already. That's cool. But I am Bob Mackey, Retronauts guy, freelancer, and just all around good dude. Who's next to me?
I'm Ray Barnholds. I'm a good dude. You know, I like to think so.
Ray, I think you're a bad dude.
Okay.
Who else do we have?
I'm Jeremy Parrish, senior editor of usgamer.net, and that, I believe, with a site name like that, makes me a bro.
Do you have senioritis?
I do.
Okay.
It's like the eternal last week of the semester for
Wow.
me.
Wow. That'll happen until you retire, right?
Pretty much.
Cool. Who else do we have?
I'm Kat Bailey. I'm joining you in this lovely vault. I hope I don't suffocate.
Yay.
I'm a freelancer. I'm not a dude or a bro. I guess I'm a battle girl?
Battle girl.
Sure.
Is that the name of a manga?
Battle Girl. Yeah, lots of mangas called Battle Girl.
Yeah,
most
okay.
of them are vaguely pornographic, but what can I say?
I thought
there's Battle Angel.
That's true.
Battle
that's
Angel,
probably what
yeah.
I was thinking
that
of.
That wasn't pornographic. It was
off topic, did James Cameron want to make that into a movie a billion
yes.
times?
I'm
so glad it's never happened.
Okay.
Because he would just, oh my God, I can't imagine.
He'd find new things to do with puppets, I bet.
So, awesome.
Enough about James Cameron. Let's talk about... do we want to talk about Virtual Console releases? We're always going to be a little bit behind because of the way we're recording our shows. Our shows are recorded at least 2 weeks in advance. Do we want to talk about anything that came out of Virtual Console?
We can predict releases because Jeremy's good at that, actually.
It doesn't work if I actively try to do it, though.
Oh,
you need to have like an Amazing Kreskin-style skit, like where you put an envelope up to your head.
Right.
I have like, no insider information.
Karnak.
If we don't want to talk about Virtual Console, we could talk about the Dungeons & Dragons Chronicles of Astara.
Any kind of retro release would be good. So I know you wrote about it, Jeremy, mm-hmm. for US Gamer. And what do you have to say about it?
It's an arcade brawler. It's a walk from the left to the right and punch things kind of game.
Yeah.
But within that context, it's sort of at the pinnacle in terms of ambition, scope, content, just overall quality. It's really sort of... the Capcom dudes who did that at their like kind of at the
was that the late 90s?
It was about 95. I think the first one was 94 and the second one was 96.
There was a second Dungeons and Dragons in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Well,
it's both of these.
Yeah, okay. this is the collection. Okay, so it's out for pretty much every platform: mm-hmm. PS3, Xbox 360, Wii U, and Steam. Mm-hmm. And it compiles two games together. Dungeons & Dragons Tower of Doom and Dungeons & Dragons Shadow of Mystara. And both of those are 90s era Capcom walk and punch brawlers. But they incorporate a lot of D&D elements. And it's not just superficial things like, hey, now I'm punching a beholder. It's actually, like, there is a leveling system. The abilities you get are things like magic missile. And probably the most interesting part of it is that the game branches. Both games branch as you play. And you have decisions that you have to make, like do I take this path or that path? But on top of that, there are more nuanced role playing elements too. Like you can have conversations with people, and if you give them the right answer, then you might find like a secret bonus area or something. As far as games that kind of have that very limited style go, it's really kind of spectacularly deep, and I'm really happy that it came out here because. They were released in the arcades in the U.S., but then never showed up on a home console. The only way you could play them without, piracy was to get a Saturn version of the game.
Would you need the RAM for that, too?
Yeah, you have to get it's a Japanese release, so
okay.
you have to have some kind of converter for playing it, or a Japanese system. And that collection has become really expensive, like $130
on the market. It's a super pricey Saturn game.
So getting it for $15 is pretty nice. And the overall package, you know, the wrapper around it is pretty nice too. It does a really nice thing where you kind of sort of track your achievements on the side. Like you have achievements for casting X or, you know, setting X number of enemies on fire or whatever. So anytime you work toward an achievement, you get a little notice in sort of the sidebar where there's extra space because of the widescreen format of current systems.
Yeah, that's sort of the developer Iron Galaxy's trademark.
Did they do Final Fight Arcade for Capcom?
I don't know. Probably, but they also did Third Strike Online and most recently the Darkstalkers Collection and then Marvel vs. Capcom Origins, and they all have that treatment check.
Yeah, I don't ever play fighting games. So
and then also the crazy arcade view filters. And
I would say Castle Crashers is probably the direct result of this collection, right?
To date. Dragon's Crown is even more so, since it has George Kamitani, the illustrator.
Oh, he was doing art back then, too?
So Princess Crown is basically a contemporary of those games.
Princess Crown is a few years later, structured, too.
Yeah, it's, I mean, Muramasa, Princess Crown, Odin Sphere are all kind of sort of this pseudo-RPG thing, whereas Dragon's Crown is much more of the classic arcade brawler. But I think Kamitani did background art for the D&D games, or at least the second one.
Connections.
And there's also, not Princess Crown, but Code of Princess, which just came out last year. And I can't remember her name, Nishimura, I believe.
Yeah.
The character designer for the original D&D games was the one responsible for Code of Princess's character design. Whatever you may think of that.
I confuse those games because they both have hideous anatomy, and they both have the word prince in them somewhere.
Well, there's Princess Crown, Code of Princess, and Dragon's Crown. So it's like, it all kind of...
Yeah, it's like Kingdom Hearts, Shadow Hearts, and Heart Kingdom. There's like a million games with Kingdom and Hearts in them.
I've never had any confusion between Shadow Hearts and Kingdom Hearts.
Well, there was three games. It was like, they all had Shadow Hearts and Kingdom, like, rearranged in some order for the PS2. And they were all very different games, but I thought that was funny. It's like, these are the words you use when you're marketing an RPG.
What about Ring of Red and Red Faction? Elemental Gunbolt and Elemental Gimmick Gear.
One is a fundamental hardware problem.
Gears of War and... never mind.
Guilty Gears.
Yeah, right? Guilty Gear.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of words that you can use in video game titles, unfortunately.
No. We're actually running out of things to put after colons, like retribution, absolution.
Judgment.
Right. Oh, God. Yeah.
So are there any Wii or 3DS virtual console games of note? I know we talked about Spelunker last week.
I have a hard time playing NES games on my 3DS.
Oh, no, it was a bunch of
Game Gear stuff.
Sorry, yeah, it was a bunch of Game Gear stuff.
Let's start new.
Somebody was suggesting that Genesis games were out on the 3DS, and I was like, I think that's a fact error.
In Japan, Sega's actually doing the series of 3DS, it's like the 3D classics, and they're doing that with arcade and Genesis games. So, yes, Sonic the Hedgehog, and I believe Sonic the Hedgehog 2 are out. There's like 8 of them, and they haven't been announced
for the US. I play Sonic 2 on my 3DS.
At least when we're talking about this, the most recent releases have been a bunch of Game Gear games.
Yep.
And I think those...
Crystal Warriors, Defenders of Oasis.
And like 2 Sonic ports?
Yeah.
Sonic.
Yep, and the worst ones.
Yeah, they are.
Two of the worst ones.
I don't understand, but I guess I never will. Like, the least in-demand system and the least in-demand games are getting like the highest priority. We don't have, like, Wario Land 3. We don't have a lot of really awesome Game Boy games that we still are getting, like, Game Gear.
Yeah.
We're
Nintendo's got to space out.
I guess so.
Nintendo has to space out the things that people want. And I think a lot of the releases have to do with the third-party publishers. It seems like there are only a few that are really enthusiastic about Virtual Console.
Yeah.
Capcom and Sega particularly. So, yes, we're getting all these first-party Sega Game Gear games because that's pretty much all Sega can put on 3DS Virtual Console.
You didn't want them the first time, and now they're back.
Unless M2 could, you know, give us some Genesis games, I'd be okay with that.
That'd be cool. Oh, well.
So, there's a bunch of Game Gear games. I haven't played most of them. I know that one of them is a really bad 8-bit port of Sonic 3D Blast that... Everyone says,
oh, really?
Do not play that.
Oh, it's not even a port. It's just an original platformer. It's like the sequel to the other Sonic platformers.
Oh.
I still like Sonic Chaos and Triple Trouble. Those are like the, you know, lesser of four evils. So,
those ones are okay.
So if someone's holding you to gunpoint and they're making you buy one of these, buy Triple Trouble?
Yeah.
Or, whatever
and
it's
chaos,
called.
Yeah.
Chaos.
But Sonic Labyrinth is putrid. Just like straight up.
Yeah,
awful.
Wait, is that's not a new release though? That's been out, right?
No, it just came out.
Oh my god, they brought out Sonic Labyrinth. Jeez.
They finally brought out the worst Sonic Game Gear game. Congratulations.
Did you just say Jeez, oh man?
Jeez, oh man.
Oh, man. Right.
Is that an Ohio thing?
No, it's Dr. Farnsworth. Jeez, oh, man.
Really? I've been saying that since childhood.
Professor Farnsworth.
Okay.
Okay, well, you are Professor Farnsworth.
I am wise beyond my years, or at least old beyond my years. So, let's move on to our main topic, Wario. And if you're listening to this at home, you may be like, why do I care about Wario? He just was on a bunch of dinky little platformers on the Game Boy that I probably didn't play. Well, you know what? You're wrong, sir. Because at the root of Wario games is, like, just these great fundamental game-changing ideas that Nintendo would eventually work into all of their platformers, or at least a good deal of their platformers. So, where did Wario come from? Well, he was the antagonist in Mario Land 2. That came out in 1992 or 93. I believe it was 92. So Wario is 20 years old, if you can imagine that, yeah. by this point in time.
I would say his roots go back even further to Wrecking Crew. A lot of people think that Forman Spike is sort of the antecedent to Wario. I don't know if that's the case, but I think in more of a spiritual sense, Wrecking Crew is the first time that R&D1...
That's right, that was R&D1.
Took their hand at creating a Mario game, and it was unlike any of the other Mario games.
And that guy's name was Spike, I think?
Forman Spike.
And also, Mario RPG has their own variant of Wario and Booster, so those two should get along or like get together at some point and maybe try to steal Wario's identity.
Yeah. R&D1 also worked on Mario Land, the first Mario Land for Game Boy, and that one was also very different from most Mario games.
The first Super Mario Land doesn't really feel at all like the Wario games, but Super Mario Land 2 feels like Mario trapped in a Wario game, and it's a very strange game.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because it is bizarre. It kind of paints Mario like implicitly as this, it puts him in a very Wario type role where it's like it's all about getting treasure and you're in the land that's like a tribute to you, and there's giant Mario statues and things like that, and all the enemies are bizarre and strange and things you only see in one level, like pumpkin ghosts and weird mice and everything like that.
What this tells me is that Mario has an incredible ego. This is apparently his mansion, his whole world that he took over for himself.
Yeah, I don't know where
he has a giant statue of himself that you can actually go inside, like the Colossus
what
of
I
Rhodes.
Know.
It's not hard to sort of read a resentment of Nintendo EAD on Nintendo R&D1's part on that.
To look at
the way that they sort of present Mario as like this sort of pompous, self-aggrandizing glory hound.
Yeah, with a lot of fuck you money. And
the interesting thing was that Wario actually figured very heavily into Mario Land 2's advertisements. Like the actual commercial featured Wario prominently, did not feature Mario.
It featured Wario, which is good. I mean, Wario has a much more distinct personality in that he has a personality.
He immediately appeared in the comics. Like the Nintendo Power had a comic where it's Mario's birthday, or it's Princess Peach's birthday party, and he and Mario are both getting her a present. And Wario is trying to one-up Mario, and he's super jealous of Mario because apparently they were brothers growing up.
Right, yeah, they had a rivalry, very, very Japanese-style rivalry between each other.
So that was kind of the beginning of the, even before the Wario Land games came out.
He's the Ryoga to Mario's Ranma.
Obey me, Wario. I am your master. Mario is your enemy.
The wicked imposter Wario has cast an evil spell over Mario Land.
Don't let Mario get the 6 golden coins. Don't let Mario reach the palace.
This is the biggest, most dangerous, most challenging Game Boy adventure yet.
Obey Wario. Destroy Mario.
Don't fall under Wario's evil spell in Super Mario Land 2. Only on Game Boy.
And we mentioned R&D1. We should talk at least a little bit, like a little sidebar, like who was R&D1 and how is their design philosophy active in the Wario Land series?
Well, it was a team run by Gunpei Yokoi.
Right.
And they did Metroid, Kid Icarus, those kinds of games.
But before that, I mean, these were the people behind Nintendo's toys that they made, the non-video game type toys. And I think, and Jeremy sort of, you know, got me on this train for the R&D1 brigade, but they are more focused on not the rules of a video game, but like the best way to have fun with something. Is that true? Would you say that?
I mean, I think that's true to a certain degree in all of Nintendo's games, and I think that's very much Shigeru Miyamoto's philosophy for game design. But he's not really working as a game designer so much these days.
Yeah.
But like, I think that, yeah, the R&D one philosophy has always been kind of about seeing what you can do with the technology at hand, getting the most out of the tech. I mean, that was Yokoi's sort of driving philosophy, but also to subvert expectations and do something outside the norm.
Yeah.
I mean, while Nintendo EAD kind of defined video games in a lot of ways with games like Mario and Zelda, R&D 1, it seemed like their games were always kind of almost reactionary to, mm-hmm. To what EAD was doing. And, so yeah, they like, I think they're two parts of a whole, and I enjoy each group's games in a different way. Like R&D 1 is always more experimental, which I suppose is kind of appropriate for a company, for a team called R&D 1.
And I don't know, the analogy I was thinking of, it's just like Miyamoto and his team are like the straight A students in the front of the class, and R&D 1 are like the bad kids in the back, you know, just having their own fun.
I would say it's more like kind of the weird kid sitting to the side who's always doodling
and eating paste.
Yeah, but not like, really, if you actually look through his notes, they're crazy and they're amazing, but you know, they're not necessarily getting him the best grades.
He doesn't work well with others, maybe.
Right.
Yeah. So I did want to mention a few of the key figures behind Mario before we actually start talking about the games. And these guys, strangely enough, like, I think they both ascended to executive hell or heaven, however you want to consider it, because they haven't been credited on games for a while. So I believe they're just like consulting, which is sad, but I guess no one really directs games in Japan after they turn 40. It seems like that's the way things work in those businesses. Am I right? I don't know. I just noticed that. So Hiroji...
How old is Goichi Suda?
Goichi Suda, he's got to be in his 40s now, but...
So, see, yeah. There you go.
I feel like only quote-unquote personalities are the ones directing games into their 40s and 50s, like Kojima, Suda.
Yeah, and even then, it's
like, is Nomura past his 40s? He has to be.
Like, even that
he
label,
dresses
though,
like he's in his teens.
Yeah. That label director is kind of a vanity thing there.
Yeah, more, I think so. Yeah, it's less hands-on. But I did want to mention Hiroji Kiyotake. He created Wario, he co-directed Mario Land 2 and 3, and he designed Samus. And I guess he was credited for Samus' original design in Super Metroid. That's how people found that out. And weirdly enough, I was doing research on him, and he looks a lot like Wario. I'm not even kidding. The picture I saw of him, he had like ears sticking out, a mustache, and like a big strange grin on his face.
Nintendo's designers show up a lot as video game characters because...
All the Koopa kids.
Well, I was going to say Koji Kondo is...
Tingle.
Brought to life as Tingle.
Yeah.
And also Hip Tanaka... looks a lot like the Specnose enemies from Kid Icarus, which are just like a big bushy mustache and a nose.
Yeah. And then the guy who plays KK, who does the music for Nintendo,
Totake.
Yeah, he's the dog in Animal Crossing. I mean, they like putting themselves in their games. Slippy is based on somebody that worked at Nintendo, I guess, who had like prayer beads or something like that. Yeah, because Slippy wears like Buddhist prayer beads or something, and I was reading in an interview, it's like, that's based on somebody at the studio. So I wouldn't want to have Slippy be based on me, but that's
wasn't,
just me.
Wasn't Boo from Mario based on someone's wife who was very shy, but then when the designer would go home late, she would kind of like blow up and explode and freak out.
Yeah, and I think in interviews they even named the designer's name.
I can't remember who it was.
But it's weird because in Japan, Boo is named Teresa, so it's more of a direct connection. Although I don't think those things are female. At least not the ones with like lipstick and bows.
I don't think his wife's name was Teresa.
That's no, I don't think so either. Name. But I like it that they gave like it's also strangely misogynist. It's like this enemy is an evil woman. Let's give her an evil woman's name. So we have Hiroji Kiyotake, Wario's creator. We also have Takehiko Hosokawa. And he co-directed Mario Land 2 and 3, but he directed Wario Land 2 and... He directed Super Mario Land 2 and 3, and he directed Wario Land 2 and 3. So 2 and 3 were his games as director. And he hasn't been credited on a game since 2004's Zero Mission, so I'm guessing he's in executive heaven as well, alongside his peers. Which is a shame. Like, his games are so good.
Think of it as Parnassus.
Okay.
They're gazing down in wisdom upon the mortals.
When can they come down and start kicking ass?
Sprinkling us with their wisdom.
Okay. I don't believe that at all. But
through the demigods.
I don't see his design philosophy at work in a lot of Nintendo things these days, but we'll talk about that later. So my crackpot theory before I begin, and it is a crackpot theory because I'm not sure if I believe it. So Sonic the Hedgehog came out in 1991. It was the answer to Mario. He was cooler. He was better. He was, you know, the Uber Mario for the 90s, you know. Wario, I believe, is Nintendo's answer to Sonic the Hedgehog, and that they didn't take the question seriously. They're like, we're gonna give you the answer to Sonic by making fun of our own character. And that's sort of what the first Wario Land is. Yeah. I read the first Wario Land as a parody of Mario games, more so than it being its own thing that would it eventually become. So actually, let's get started and talk about Wario Land 1, Super Mario Land 3. Yes, this game came out in 1994, and Mario's name in the title, but that's just kind of to sell it to people with this new character. So the name of the game is Super Mario Land 3 Wario Land.
I think it's the other way around.
Oh, wait, Wario Land Super Mario Land 3?
Yeah. Mm.
I know, okay, there's going to be some weird name things later,
Was it actually Super Mario Land 3 in Japan? Because I know Yoshi's Island was not Super Mario World 2.
You know, I didn't see that, but you could be right.
I think so.
That could be a marketing thing. You're right, yeah. For us Americans, like, Wario, what's that?
And Yoshi's Island DS was Yoshi's Island 2 elsewhere, but not here.
They should have called that game Insert into Garbage Can immediately.
No, that's the new one.
Oh, I don't like the DS one either. But the new one looks worse.
The new one will make you appreciate the DS one.
Okay, I don't want that to happen, but I guess it will. So, yes. I did want to mention that I was playing these games. I played through them all recently, and I've been playing them with keeping in mind, like, what is this doing different from Mario? And I noticed some key things about the first Wario Land. So this is something that would be carried over into future Mario games. So one thing I noticed was the power-ups in Wario Land aren't always empowering. Being small always sucks, but each power-up has situational use that is applied in specific areas. That aren't always friendly to those power-ups. Like, you might need to use your dragon hat to open up a key or find a door, but getting through the area that where the door is not the best place to use the fire hat, but you need it. So it's all about holding on to power-ups situationally and then using those power-ups to, you know, access certain areas and stuff like that. Where I feel like in Mario, at least up until a point, like, every power-up was empowering in some way. You rarely had to hold on to something because there were different ways to approach a problem. But this is a very puzzle-type game. Sorry, Kat, go ahead.
Well, as you said, it carried over into later Mario games, such as New Super Mario Brothers. On the DS. And I actually found that I never really liked that type of mechanic because it stressed me out trying to hold on to the bullhorns or the dragon hat.
Right.
And because whenever you touched an enemy, obviously, if you screwed up and you became small, then you're screwed and you can't get the treasure.
Right. But I found that this game, actually, the punishment that it gave you wasn't that severe. There are power-ups everywhere, and the levels aren't that big. So if you want to play through another chunk of a level to hold on to something...
Well, it's more annoying in the New Super Mario Bros.
Oh, definitely,
games,
yeah.
Especially
yeah.
because with getting the Micro Mushroom was actually just darn hard to find. So.
Yeah, I like that, you know, when it's done properly, I like that concept because it shows a sort of thinking of level design on multiple levels. You know, a lot of times, especially with Mario games, levels are these self-contained entities which have their own mechanics and gimmicks and enemies and situations, and everything is kind of discrete. But then you start to get these elements that break away from that and that force you to think about, like, you know, sort of outside of the boundaries of the level, like, where can I apply this ability elsewhere? And that was actually always sort of integral to Mario in Super Mario World, where you would am I remembering right? You could take Yoshi from one stage to another.
Yes, you could. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean that kind of started there, and they've taken that away in the new Super Mario Brothers games, and you know, pretty much all the Mario games they do now. If you finish a level, then you hop off Yoshi, and Yoshi's like, "Thanks, okay, see you some other time. Next time you play this level." So that's actually been, in a lot of ways, taken away from the Mario games.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, there's
something that I like.
Me too. And there are some things that Wario would give to Mario, some things that Mario wouldn't take from Mario, which I think Mario needs right now as a franchise, as like a 2D platformer. But continuing as to how this game is different than Mario, like a subversion of Mario. I'm going to get these two mixed up all
the
time.
You've been doing that the entire episode.
Please don't, like, you know what I mean if I keep doing it. So just look at the context of things, because Wario and Mario are easy.
Every time he makes that mistake, just take a shot.
Yeah, exactly.
Just take back your donation.
No, what?
So, you can't do that, sorry.
We have to send back our recording equipment.
Every time he does that, give us more money.
So another thing is Wario isn't invincible yet. but enemies can't kill him by touching him. That was like a rule in platformers. If something touches you, it's implied that they're hurting you in some way. But in Wario Land, when an enemy touches you, it just gets knocked the hell over.
Unless they have a spear or something.
That's true. And like immediately they start presenting ways. Like, okay, you can't bump the enemy from this side. You can't bump it from that side. You can't bump it from above. They do things to play it with that.
Well, and even that is sort of an extrapolation of Mario mechanics. Mario did that where, you know, Super Mario Brothers, you could jump on enemies until the enemy started to have spikes.
Yeah.
And then you'd appear, you know, spinies would appear and you couldn't jump on those. So it forced you to think of other ways to approach that. So it is, again, riffing on just kind of essential Mario design.
But I found that, like in Wario, his means of defense were more horizontal, and Mario is more of like a vertically offensive character, if that makes sense.
Well, Wario is more horizontal.
Yeah, he's a more horizontal guy.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was a fat joke. That wasn't nice.
You can actually charge into guys and knock them away.
That's true, yeah. Also, jumping on enemies doesn't kill them, which is another thing. You have to butt stomp them. And is this the first game, Nintendo game, with a butt stomp? I think it has to be.
Yeah, it's a good 3 or 4 years before Mario 64.
Right.
Well,
and a year
Yoshi's
before
Island,
Yoshi's
Island had that, but it was still after this
game.
Yeah,
so I feel like all of these moves of Wario that we're going to see eventually filtered down into different games. But the butt stomp is something that is now like in every Nintendo game, except for the Zelda, obviously.
I hadn't remembered that. That's interesting, though. That it carried over. That Mario actually took some of Wario's moves.
Yeah, no wonder they hate each other. So, also in this...
got all the credit for it.
Yep. Coins are important now. They're not just, you know, something to pick up for the thrill of just picking something up. You need them to unlock checkpoints. They're actually used in the stages. You need them to actually finish a level. And the amount of money you get also determines what ending you have. So, unlike in Mario, I mean, coins are important to some extent for lives, but I mean, I guess we never really worry about lives that much in a Mario game because...
No, especially not after a while.
No.
They're pretty important in Mario 3, especially once you get to the later levels.
Yeah, exactly.
Now it's just too easy.
New Luigi U makes lives very
well,
important.
Well, yeah, well, that game's
treasure
just...
them.
That's
almost,
good to hear.
That's almost Mario Brothers 2 level, Mario Lost Levels
level.
But the thing I liked about Wario Land was that there was an overarching goal, and that wasn't a thing that you necessarily saw in Mario games before that.
Yeah,
because you're trying to get X amount of money and give Wario a castle, and if you don't get the treasures at the end of the game, you have a birdhouse.
Yeah. That's right. I think I had a cabin at the end of my game recently played through it.
I never got the castle. I got pretty far up, and I ended up replaying the game many times trying to get all those treasures, and some of them are very well hidden.
They are, yeah. It's a very puzzly game.
And that was in large... That was in... it's the same quality within Mario World to some extent. I mean, you don't have the overarching goal, but you're trying to get to the Star Land.
Right, and secret exits and stuff like that.
I really like that quality in both of those games.
Me too.
And to some extent, it's gotten lost.
That's what
I
really miss
Mario games.
About the new Mario games. There's no... I mean, there is exploration, but it's only... I guess the rewards for it aren't in more stages. It's just like, you know, power-ups and stuff like that.
Big coins. You can get 3 of those. That's all.
That's not entirely true. New Super Mario Brothers, you... does a pretty good job of giving you a lot of alternate exits.
Okay, I haven't played that much of it, so I speak from ignorance.
It's probably the best.
Not as much in the DS games.
No, but
DS, meh.
I would say Mario U is probably the most like classic Super Mario World-ish of all the new games.
Yeah, I know that's what I was trying to go for. I'll have to play more of it then. I've been really into platformers lately, obviously.
Well, I'm just saying they didn't simply aspire to that. They actually hit it in a lot of ways.
Cool.
I liked Wario Land's the art style. I liked the big sprites.
Yes. I'm going to hit that 1 second. I just want to get to the last point, and then we can talk about the graphics, because that's a point I did want to make, Kat. The other major difference between Mario and Wario is that Mario is meant to be played just like running in a straight line, just, you know, jumping without breaking a stride. I mean, in the best case scenario. And in Wario Land, it's really more fidgety and methodical how you play, because Wario can only charge for a short distance. He's slower. He can't run. And it's more about exploring than just, you know, running an obstacle course or whatever. But Kat, please continue about your graphics point, because I do want to talk about that.
I like the big detailed sprites.
Yeah.
I liked the world. At the time when I was playing, and I played it right when it came out, I remember thinking that the actual world map, almost compared to Mario World, and Wario himself is a much bigger figure on the screen, which makes sense,
yeah,
given that
he's huge.
He was gigantic in Mario Land 2.
He was like the size of 8 Marios in Mario Land 2.
He was huge.
Yeah.
And the enemies are correspondingly bigger. It's almost a little like the Mega Man games for the Game Boy.
Yeah, yeah.
Where Mega Man is also gigantic, but it doesn't feel like a hindrance.
Works a lot better in Wario Land, because Wario Land is such a slower, more methodical game, whereas Mega Man, it just feels like you're not given enough information, and you're going to die a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that, actually. I think Wario Land 1 is the best looking of the 3 Game Boy games, just because of how focused it is on being bizarre and weird. And I think when you get to Game Boy Color games, there's always the chance that you're not going to have the same definitions as you would with four colors for some reason. It just the four color games look sharper to me in some instances, and this is one of them. I don't know if you guys think
Mario
I'm crazy.
Mario himself looks is animates much better in later games.
Yeah, but. I mean, he's more of a, like, in this game, he's strangely off. He's a strangely off-model character. Like, Nintendo characters are very symmetrical and very cleanly drawn. He is, like, demented-looking in this game, which is what I like.
And he's always kind of facing the screen.
Yeah, he's always kind of, like, leering at you, I guess.
So you got this almost isometric perspective.
Yeah.
It's a little weird, especially in comparison to later Mario and Wario games.
Yeah, he becomes much, like, rounder and symmetrical and more well-animated. In this game, he looks like a Garbage Pail Kid version of Mario. Like, everything is
really
like a Garbage Pail Kid version of what you would find in a Mario game.
It
seems
like they were really going for that.
Yeah.
But it worked.
Yeah.
I really liked that game.
Sorry, Jeremy, do you have something to say?
I was just going to say, I think the problem with Game Boy Color games is that they have a really weird color palette.
They do.
There's something about Game Boy Color, I don't know what it was, but the color palettes were always really off, not just on the screen, but in emulators and screenshots.
I think it's because, did they feel compelled to use the most brightest, garish colors they could find because
of the screen?
No, I feel
like the colors are not bright and garish.
Oh, really?
I feel like the colors tend to be kind of muted. Like, instead of yellows, you have mustards and...
That is true. I was
Everything
playing
is just sort of
Wario Land 2. There's a lot of like magenta and like bright blue, and Wario's a weird color too.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like when I think of Game Boy Color games, I think of like tertiary colors instead of primary colors.
Yeah, yeah.
Color theory. What can you do?
So my major point was this with this game, and we're not going to be talking about the other games in this much depth because there's a lot to get through with the first Wario Land. The rest are just like, let's just see how these things do it differently. With this one, it feels like they wanted to make this game a parody of Mario rather than the original creation. And, like, everything feels like a riff on Mario. Like, I mean, even if there are Mario enemies in the game, they're made grotesque in some way. Like, there are Thwomps, there are Goombas, but they're all, like, hideous or, like, strange in some way. Like, the Thwomps, they chase you. There are, like, four scrolling levels where Thwomps chase you. And just, like, everything is just a little off. The bosses are just gigantic and hideous. As they would be in Wario Land 4. I don't think they returned to that until Wario Land 4.
But impressive on that little Game Boy screen.
Definitely, yeah, yeah.
That sort of grotesque design is something you actually did see a lot in classic Japanese games. Not necessarily from Nintendo, though. But
no.
There are tons and tons of third-party games that just have weird, surreal, bizarre, unsettling design.
Yeah, yeah. This
is one of Nintendo's few forays into that kind of style. For whatever reason.
It reminded me of Parodius a lot, and I've been playing those games, just because it's just like a
Parodius
parody.
Parodius is more goofy.
It is.
This is a little more, I don't know, like something along the lines of maybe like Gege Gege Kitaro or something, where everything's kind of like just a little gross.
Yeah, like everybody's drooling or crying or there's a lot of body fluids and...
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's the early
Although,
90s. Lovely. That was in Western animation as well, the Ren and Stimpy look.
That is true. I mean, that could be like... That could have cleared the air for Wario. Like, kids love Ren and Stimpy. They need anti-heroes. Let's do this.
I'm going to guess that it probably didn't.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that Nintendo's designers were like, man, that
Ren and Stimpy
that
sure
comic,
is.
that gross-out cartoon in America, we should jump on that.
But, I mean, it does feel weird that like family-friendly Nintendo would have such a anti-hero, even though he was a goofball at this point in time.
Nintendo is not the squeaky clean company that
I mean, I know
treats
they,
it.
They come from, like, I mean, they were horribly corrupt at one point.
No, it's not even that. I'm not talking about, like, the love hotels or whatever from the distant past.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the sort of, like, you know, we love God and Protestantism Nintendo that we think
Sunday
of,
school.
That's kind of like the whitewashed version that they've become in America. Nintendo of America is one thing, but in Japan, Nintendo has a lot more... They tend to delve into... weirdness or darkness or sexuality or just kind of, you know, sort of off the beaten path stuff that you don't necessarily associate with Nintendo, and that stuff doesn't necessarily make it over, but you know, Wario is one of those instances, the Mother series I think to a degree, but then you have things like you know, Captain Rainbow or whatever, which are really, really way out there, and
well, I guess
just
I guess
don't make it here,
the
really.
American side is whitewashing the content that should be coming over here, or, you know, for whatever reason, doesn't. But at least in 1994, all Nintendo heroes were pretty clean-cut, very round, very happy, very friendly, weren't they?
We had just gotten into the Mortal Kombat era.
That's true.
Nintendo
maybe,
had just allowed...
I mean,
maybe just things were
games.
Getting cynical in the 90s. It's
if
like
you,
it's
If you
it's
look
time.
Back at a lot of the games that they didn't localize, they tended to be more serious or a little more... a little less rounded, a little less friendly. Things like Detective Club and
right.
Advance Wars, or, you know, Famicom Wars at the time.
Well, the conventional
Emblem.
Wisdom at that time was Americans don't like strategy games, and Americans don't like their graphical detective stories.
I'm just saying that I think it's a little limiting to look at only the Nintendo things that came to America and
right,
use that
right.
as a judge for the
context.
But
I mean...
So I don't feel like Wario is that far outside the realm of the norm for Nintendo,
okay.
even at the time.
I also don't
That's
think we should overstate how... Like, overstate Wario as being gross, because, I mean, relatively speaking, it's not Ren and Stimpy.
No, it's not. I mean,
it's only in recent years where he picks his nose
up. Now it's all about, like, body
yeah,
humor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's definitely much
But we can't say Mario, I'm sorry, Wario is Mario for the 90s.
Yes,
and
exactly.
I want to put in a guitar sting after that, so I'm just reminding myself.
He's not the Image Comics Mario. He's just kind of weird.
Not enough tattered capes.
Not enough pouches.
Yeah.
And also, you can see his feet.
Oh my God, that's true. They're very tiny, though.
No Robin Hood Mario.
Last thing I want to note about this is that Wario has an antagonist, and it's just another way that they're subverting what you expect. The antagonist is a woman, but yeah. she doesn't have a lot of presence in this game or the other ones, because I think Wario is such a strong character that it's hard to really remember what else happens in the game outside of what Wario is doing. Because
Wario's just a treasure hunter.
Yeah.
They're like the Nazis, more or less.
That gold doesn't belong to you, Wario. It belongs to the people.
Did you just Godwin Martin Wario?
Kat did that. I don't know how they connect.
Wait, does Captain Syrup show up in the other ones? Because I don't think she
Captain
showed up
Syrup
until...
Captain Syrup doesn't show up
Wario Land Shake It.
Yeah,
she didn't show up until that. Right?
She's in 1, 2, and then she goes to Shake It.
Yeah.
The other two are just Wario on his own. Because I think they realize, like, you know, Sexy Pirate Captain or whatever is
Why
not, like...
Why isn't she a character in Smash Brothers?
That's a good question.
God knows they need
I think it's a sausage fest.
Pretty much.
Yes. So if you guys are cool, let's move on to Wario Land 2. Came out in 1998 in March, and it was re-released for Game Boy Color just a year later. Is there any difference between the Game Boy and Game Boy Color version outside of the, you know, palette or what? Do we know?
I don't believe so.
I don't think there is.
It was just a quick change.
The printer in any way, like the Zelda DX.
You can get your picture with Wario, like your prom picture with Wario. That'd be great.
Actually,
picture
of you picking your nose.
It was like the Game Boy Color tech demo too. It was like they used Wario in like that original tech demo they used to like promote it.
Mm.
Man, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Was he like wearing different colors and plaids and
No, it was like it was Wario Land 2.
Okay.
It was like scenes from Wario Land 2.
He was in his golf pants.
Yeah.
Oh God, so, that's hideous.
That was where the idea for Mario Golf came from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a feeling they like finished it originally and they're like, oh, we gotta make a color version now. Okay,
was Game Boy Color 98 in America?
Yeah,
was this just before Japan, Game
right?
Boy Color launched?
It was
then?
99 actually. It was right after
No,
Pokemon.
It wasn't.
No, it was
98. It was right on time for Pokemon.
But I'm just you know,
there was a very small gap, like a month or two between the Japanese and US release, because I got the Japanese one and then the US one came out like a month
later. I'm just wondering why this was never just a Game Boy Color game. It feels like a re-release a year later feels like a little short-sighted. You know what I mean? Like, oh shit.
I
think Game Boy Color was a little short-sighted. Game Boy Color kind of came out of the ashes of Project Atlantis, which was their attempt to do
a 32-bit Retronauts episode itself.
Oh, this is a Retronauts episode.
Oh my God.
How about that?
There are layers to this.
Yeah, Game Boy Color came out of the ashes of Project Atlantis, which was their attempt to do a more high-spec portable console, but the costs were too expensive, blah, blah, blah. It never happened. So basically what they did was kind of convert sort of an NES-ish architecture to... the handheld format. So it's really weird because Game Boy Color is not exactly the same hardware as Game Boy, just made more powerful. There are some significant differences. Anyway, the point is, I feel like Game Boy Color was kind of a quick scramble to fill in the gap because they couldn't afford to go with the higher spec system that they wanted to. Basically, they wanted to do Game Boy Advance in 1998.
Game Boy Color was great, though. I loved it. It actually made use of battery power in a way that no portable had ever done before. I feel like I got a lot of... It reduced the batteries to like just two AA's, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Game Boy Pocket did that. And
okay.
It actually,
much sharper screen.
It was
the Pocket came before, that's
It was less... Pocket was 96, I think. It was less battery-friendly than the Pocket by a considerable amount. But it was still like... You know, 12 hours of battery
life. And I still had a worm light, for Christ's sake. But
of course.
Yeah, who didn't? So let's talk about Wario Land 2. I know Jeremy's a huge fan of this game, and I think his writing about it actually got me interested in Wario. So
really?
the biggest change...
You didn't like Wario before Jeremy's writing?
I never thought to try it. Just was like, what is this? I don't know. Actually, I could have picked up Wario Land 1 when I was a kid, but I got Kirby's Pinball Land instead. Not a bad alternative,
That's where Wario is kind of in the character right now. What is this? What's he doing now?
Right.
What's that Wario up to now? So the biggest change is there are no lives, which is amazing. Like, this is this huge, monumental, like, upheaval of the platformer genre. No lives. Wario is such a badass. He's immortal. You can still get hit by enemies, but they just make you lose coins, and you can't pick them up. It's not like Sonic the Hedgehog where you can pick up the coins again. They just kind of fall out of you, and that's it for the coins.
I feel like we should talk about the immortal thing, because that's such a big change.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be even bigger in the next game, so we're going to talk about this. So I guess the point of this is, like, you're punished by getting your coins taken away, and you need those coins for the chance to play these mini-games that exist in the levels. And there are two treasures in every level. One is a treasure in itself, and one is a piece of a map that you'll eventually put together in order to open the real ending of the game. Is that how it works? I haven't actually gotten that far yet.
I believe so. It's been a long time since I played Wario 2.
Yeah, me too.
So, I mean, the biggest change, and something that would stick with the Wario series after this, is that Wario can now use the attacks of certain enemies to change his shape and his status to get in areas he couldn't before. And it falls in line with the same idea of Wario Land 1 in that these power-ups aren't always empowering. They can actually make you less more susceptible to being hit or more susceptible to being attacked, but they can get you into places you normally couldn't get.
Yeah, I mean, it basically takes Wario and says this character is very, very cartoonish.
Yeah.
And then goes with that to its most logical extent, you know, the furthest extreme possible, which is that Wario, you know, like a Roger Rabbit character, can't be killed, except maybe with Dip, I don't know. But
it doesn't exist in Wario.
But basically, he's kind of rubbery, and he reacts and responds to different enemy attacks, and it's very cartoonish. It's like, you know, a Bugs Bunny villain or something. He'll always get squished and deformed and bent out of shape, but he's not really hurt, and he just kind of carries on as is.
Right.
And it really... Like, they did a really great job, one, with just coming up with this idea and saying, what if we threw away the concept of dying in a platformer? And two, building levels that worked around that concept instead of just putting, you know, this immortal character in a platformer, which would be stupid. It wouldn't work.
Yeah.
No point.
Let's Kirby's
they
up
said,
the current, right?
Yeah. I mean, they, well, you know, that's cute in a different way.
Yeah.
But no, they realized that they needed to make the levels a different kind of challenging, not necessarily a test of reflexes, but more mentally challenging and more exploratory. It's really taking, you know, that element of the Mario games and, you know, of R&D1's previous formative work in games like Metroid and pushing it to the most logical extreme.
And I really like their approach with fail states, because in the platformer, if you die, you get sent back to a checkpoint or even worse, the beginning of a level. In Wario, whenever you're given these powers, you have maybe like a 10 to 15 second objective to use them. And if you mess up, well, you just, you know, go back and then try it again. It's not any huge loss of your time, which is something I really like about this game and Wario Land 3. Like, it's just a series of tiny challenges throughout a level. They have to figure out how to approach them. And it's just a very smart way to do a platformer, which is why I'm sad this did not catch on. It feels like
In a way it did. I mean, it was one of the earliest examples of what you would see as a true puzzle platformer.
That is true, and we're going to talk more about that later.
The challenge isn't getting to the end of the level. The challenge is
like figuring
out the puzzle, right?
So. Right, right. And so what else was I going to say about this? So this same sort of idea we talked about in the last Mario game, like the power-up is used situationally. It can make you less mobile or less offensive or defensive, but you need it. I see that in Mario 64 with the different hats, like they give you a hat, you have to do these certain things with the hat in a given amount of time. Obviously, like Mario Galaxy, they just stole the spring ability from Wario Land. That's from Wario Land. This is the spring Mario. And I did want to mention that Wario, one of his power-ups is that he just gets drunk. And they call that crazy Wario in the United States, but it's clear that he is drunk.
Touch fuzzy,
crunk,
get dizzy.
Or crunk. Wario. Crunk Wario.
Yeah, I think we should actually talk about Wario's power-ups or power-downs.
Yeah.
His different powers, I guess.
Yeah.
Different states. Because I think understanding them is essential to understanding the actual difference to Mario games. With Wario Land 2, they took away the hats from the first game. And so the powers became completely different. And those became, again, different states of deformation for Wario. So I can't remember exactly which ones appear in which games, but like if you get crushed, then Wario becomes this really flattened,
it's
you like know, like pancake. 3 pixel high guy kind of wobbling around. And when he falls from a platform, he floats like paper.
Right.
Paper Mario right there. You can get stung by a bee and Wario has an allergic reaction and he floats. You can get touched by the undead and you turn into a zombie, which causes you to fall through floors and move really slowly. And if you step into sunlight, then you turn back to normal Wario.
There's also ass on fire Wario.
Yep, yep. Yeah, there are a lot of these different kind of powers that you wouldn't think normally would be a positive thing. You'd look at them and say, oh my god, my character just got screwed over. But the great thing about Wario Land 2 is that it turns these into empowerment. It turns a disadvantage into a situational advantage.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the case of true differentiation from Mario, because in Wario Land, I mean, the hats were just a riff on the raccoon ears.
Right, right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
The suits.
So this is where Wario truly becomes his own character.
There's more thought to it. It's not just like you hit a block and you touch
something. It's not a parody anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wario's definitely a different game at this point.
Right. And, I mean, using this idea, it does some cool things. Like, but what do you do with boss fights with an immortal character? Well, the bosses, they have an attack, or there are enemies in the boss arena that have an attack that can knock you out of the arena. It's basically about avoiding that one attack, which is something I really like. It makes the boss fights actually pretty tough, because it's usually one-hit kill, quote-unquote kill, before you're knocked out of the arena. But again, Wario Land is smart. The door back to the boss is always like 5 or 10 seconds away, and you just jump right into it. Like, this game does.
So it's kind of like the Tower of Hera from The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, except not really annoying if you fall off.
Yes. It's like
the Blue Arms platform.
It values your time, it respects your time, and it's so weird seeing so many super forward-thinking ideas in a game this old. And this is my first time through it. This is the first time I played through all these games except for 3, which I was obsessed with, and we'll talk about that next. So
it's not surprising. I mean, R&D1, that's what they do.
Yeah. Right.
They're forward thinking.
But I mean,
the Game Boy, the advantage of the architecture there is it was so cheap to develop for. They could afford to just
especially
experiment.
In the late 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what, you know, the role that 3DSware and indie games these days have, because they're, you know, there's this lower budget amount, there's a lower threshold for success, so you can afford to take risks that characters like Mario and even Wario himself these days can't afford to do.
Right. One thing about this game I did like was that when you finish it, and this seemed to be like a strange trend in the 90s, maybe like just a mini trend, when you finish the game, it's like, oh, you finished the game, we didn't show you a world map this whole time, here's the world map, here's all the levels you didn't play. And when I finished the game, I swear to God, I had, like, at least 40% of the game unplayed. Like, 40% of the levels. That's great. Like, what other games surprise you with, like, an extra game at the end? I mean,
it's like
Symphony of the Night.
Symphony
of the
Night. Castle and Symphony of the Night.
There's a few more, but they all happened in the 90s. And it just, I love that idea. I know it's, like, the most cost ineffective. Let's make content that some people might not see. You know what I mean? But I just love the idea.
No,
just like,
it'll all be DLC now.
Yeah, it totally would.
I think some of the Metal Slug portable games did that, the Neo Geo Pocket ones, where you would travel through a bunch of different levels and then maybe, I can't remember
if
it was at the end,
it.
But you would kind of find,
right.
Like, oh.
You finish gold
stuff.
And silver, and that's one of the best surprises ever.
I found that
it's
was
like,
a surprise.
Okay, you get on the bullet train, you're going back, you get to fight all the original gym leaders now. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was a surprise, too. And I think Kirby and the Amazing Mirror did that as well. Someone told me on the Twitter account. Like, there was a whole extra game after you finished the original, and there was new content. So
yeah, and that also did the carry power-overs from one level to another.
Okay.
That was
a
big
extent,
part of that.
Valkyrie
and it was done badly.
Does that
Valkyrie
that
Profile?
But more in the sense of if you pick a different difficulty level, you'll get different dungeons.
Right, and the game can play out completely differently every time.
Yeah.
I mean, you could totally miss a ton of content just if you play it once.
Yeah, if you do what you're told, you're not going to get a good ending. But anyway.
So do we have anything more thoughts on Wario Land 2? It's available in the eShop for $3.99. It's definitely worth $3.99. I mean, I played it for probably like 8, 10 hours, and I still have a good chunk of the game left. Anyone else want to recommend it or say anything about it?
I mean, absolutely. Buy it.
Buy this game.
It's one of the best eShop games you can get right now, right?
Hell yes. Yes, we're on to Wario Land 3. This came out in 2000, just about a year before the Game Boy Advance's launch in America. It came out May 2nd. Basically, this game is just, they took the parts of Wario Land 2 and they made the game massive. They're like, we're building off of this foundation. And this game feels to me like a mix between like Super Metroid and Yoshi's Island in a weird way, because I started playing it again recently last night, and I hadn't played through it in a few years. And this is after playing all the other Wario games. And I noticed that, like, Wario, one of the bigger problems with this game is Wario starts completely unempowered, because the abilities you have naturally in Wario Land, they're taken away and you have to find them, just like Samus. So this game feels a lot, very, very Metroid-y in that sense, and that Wario's got to build up his basic abilities first that he would normally have in a regular game. And those abilities are things that you could do naturally, like throw enemies or butt stomp or whatever. Those are items you need to pick up in levels. Before I continue, has anyone played Wario Land 3? This is like one of my favorite games of all time.
This is my personal anecdote with Wario Land 3 is that I had gotten a Game Boy Color by this point, and I was looking for games, and I read the reviews, and it was getting like 9.8s from GameSpot,
like,
and everything.
Everyone loved this game.
So I'm like, this game must be amazing. So I purchased it, and I immediately felt incredibly betrayed, because it wasn't Wario Land 1. It wasn't a traditional straightforward platformer, and Wario couldn't die? What the hell? Because
right.
I hadn't played Wario Land 2. And I had no idea what I was doing. I got extremely irritated and sold the game back.
This is a game that's it's easy to get lost in. It's a Metroid-style world that's not interconnected in any way. It has distinct levels that you jump in and out of. Like, you can go into a level and find out, I can't do anything in this level yet. So it's a lot of trial and error, and that is the one downside to the game, that it can move very slowly if you're not sure what to do yet, because
I actually really didn't enjoy the game that much. After loving Wario Land 2, to me, Wario Land 3 felt like it suffered from that plague of everything must be bigger and more complicated and more expansive.
I mean, I can see
that. A lot of Wario Land 3 hate in this room.
It was my first Wario Land game, and going into it, I can see those problems, you know, now that I've played the other games. But what I like about it is the fact that it is that big. Maybe it was kind of borrowing the idea from 3D platformers at the time. Like, it's a huge world with lots of things to find. Maybe it was inspired in that way.
Yeah, but I feel like Wario's unique skill set and his deformation, I feel like they actually work to the game's detriment, because it's so big. It just becomes really, really tedious. And to me, like I said, I loved Wario Land 2. I thought it was amazing. And Wario Land 3 felt like it did a lot of the same things, but it just wasn't lean enough. There was no economy to the design, and I lost interest in it.
That is true. Like,
I came back and I loved Wario Land 4 because it did kind of go back on that, but you know, I guess to each their own.
Right.
As much as I love exploratory Metroid-style games, this one just didn't work for me.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I mean, it's a personal favorite of mine, but I can see what the problems are.
Why is it a personal favorite of yours?
I think it just hit me at the right time. It hit me at a time where it was like 2D games were considered to be a thing of the past, I guess. And, I mean, Jeremy, you had a 2D game website at the time, I think.
2000 at this point.
It was, yeah.
The PlayStation was almost gone.
It's like, guys, everything's going to be 3D now, so just hold on to your seats. It's going to happen.
Yes, I did have a website that was dedicated to 2D gaming, and when I launched that, my site traffic dropped by about 2/3.
So you can see how popular 2D games were at the time.
Amazing.
And as someone who grew up on 2D games, this was meaningful to me, because it's like, here's a 2D game that's as big and full of secrets as a modern 3D platformer, you know. And I think they were inspired by things like, for better or worse, Banjo-Kazooie, you know, things like that, maybe Mario 64. And what I like about this game is the size, and I keep saying that, but I like how each stage has a night and day version. There's a freaking clock in this game. It's not a real-time clock. It's like whenever you exit a stage, it turns from day to night, and each stage has different things happening in the day and the night. And like I said, it's a lot of visiting a stage, figuring out you can't do anything, and then leaving, and then going to the next one. But there's a guy in the game that will tell you where to go next at all times. It's like a talking head or whatever, like Olmec from Legends of the Hidden Temple. He'll be hanging around. one thing I noticed about this game, and we're not going to talk about it for that much longer because, I mean, it's not much more than a super souped-up version of Wario Land 2. One thing I noticed is that they really cut down on the platforming, like straight-up Wario platforming, and it's almost all about transformations. Like, everything you do in the game is about being transformed into a different form. And they kind of, like, introduced that slowly in Wario Land 2, but in Wario Land 3, just in the first two stages, you're being transformed, like, 5 times to do things. And, like, it really feels like each room is, like, a puzzle room, sort of like what they did with Wario Land 4. They kind of moved those puzzles, like, out of the main part of the game. I'm not sure if that was concession to something, but we'll talk about that later.
It's like a tutorial. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, here, learn how to do everything, even though you probably won't get to do half of it until later.
Yeah. So, I mean, do we have anything more to say about this game? I mean, Jeremy, not a huge fan. I don't know if Kat kind of...
I mean, I don't want to come off like I hate it or something.
You hate it.
Who do you like more, Bob or Jeremy?
Yeah.
Decide now, fans.
Vote.
No. I'm not going to say that I... Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think it's a good game. I just feel like it does make some missteps.
Right, right.
And to me, actually, Wario games kind of follow the Star Trek rule, and the odd-numbered ones aren't as good as the even-numbered ones.
We're going to talk about an even number one next, and that one is...
I guess
is...
that only works if you don't count Virtual Boy Wario, though.
Oh, God. Oh, we are going to go actually do spinoffs after this one, so... Next game is Wario Land 4, and that came out November 19th, 2000, United States. My story, and actually, it's weird how Jeremy and I had, like, the same reaction, but with different games. I love Wario Land 3, and I played Wario Land 4, and I was like, what the hell is this? Like, what the hell am I doing? It didn't sit with me, because it is a very, like, it's a game that doesn't want you to like it immediately. I mean, the graphics are great, but it's a very, like, strange, has a lot of anti-game elements in it that are working against... someone new to the series wanting to get into it. It's like, I don't know, I feel like it's a very aggressive game, but I guess that fits into Wario's personality. But when I bought it, I was like, okay, Wario Land 3 is like the biggest 2D platformer I've ever played. I loved it. Like, the levels feel like Zelda dungeons almost. And then I bought Wario Land 4, and it was like, there are only 18 levels in this game, and Wario has, like, hearts now. I thought he was immortal, and you don't really transform as much. I mean, there were some things in the game I did like, but the fact that it was so different than 3 turned me off. So I had the same reaction Jeremy did, but with a different game. But like, I played through it again recently, and I loved it. So my opinion changed.
I think Wario Land 4 is one of the best games I've ever played.
It's really good. It's excellent.
I fell immediately in love with it. I was put off at first by the fact that, yes, Wario can die, but like within a level or two, I immediately realized, no, this is really good. This adds sort of that element of tension that Wario Land 3 lacked. And it adds kind of like stakes to the game, and it keeps it from becoming too much of a slog.
And maybe I was good at it, but I found I never really needed to worry about hearts outside of boss fights.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they do add to your treasure if you have a bunch of hearts at the end, but enemies don't normally... I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a very hard game. It's not easy. Finding things can be hard in it.
It's easy to get to the end. It's very difficult to... get everything.
So we should talk about the main gimmick of this game. It's basically you run through a stage, you hit a switch, and then you have to run back before the stage explodes or kicks you out, basically.
You press this frog plunger thing at the end of the stage, and then the stage detonates, and you have a very limited amount of time to escape. So you actually backtrack through the stages, but the paths back are generally not the same as the paths that you took to get there.
Right.
Like, you experience the stage in a completely different way. Not only are you rushing and you don't have time to explore, although there are things that you need to find.
Yeah, like...
that you should try to find.
We should point out that you have to find 4 treasures in each stage to pass, and a key.
Right.
Sometimes the levels will put those on the way back, so you have to find them on your way back, you know, while the time limit's ticking down. Mm-hmm. And it feels very Metroid-y, just because, I mean, Metroid didn't invent the time limit, but I feel like there's a connection there, you know what I mean? I don't know, maybe it's just like a very, very tenuous connection, but...
Yeah, I don't think
it's tenuous at all.
I didn't want to make any bold claims.
Ray?
Ray didn't like it. Ray's being oddly silent.
Yeah, I don't like...
Put the hammer down, Ray.
Too many stakes. I'm too much of a wimp that way, I think.
I found that, like, that bothered me at first, and I'm someone who liked Majora's Mask, but playing through Wario Land 4 again, I found that they usually give you more than enough time. Like, I would always have at least 30 to 45 seconds left.
At the end. Yeah. But I enjoyed it just because... it gives you, you know, these stages, and there's so many different ways to experience it as a result. Like, some of the stages, like the junkyard level, just, they seem like they go on forever. There's so much to do and find and explore.
Yeah.
And then on the way back, you're rushing through. And so all of a sudden it takes on a completely different nature. And I like sort of like two different perspectives on one set of obstacles.
And weirdly enough, like you mentioned rushing back through, and I mentioned that earlier, that Sonic, this was Nintendo's answer to Sonic by just making fun of their own character. The way back feels a lot like Sonic-style gameplay, where you're rushing, you're rolling into ball. I mean, I think maybe just because I played the pinball stage, and it's basically just a glorified Sonic stage with Wario in the lead. I'm like, this is actually better than a lot of Sonic the Hedgehog games I played, rolling, you know, like a lot of the Wario rolled into a ball challenges.
You know, the weird thing is I always get that a little mixed up with a very similar area in Castlevania Harmony of Dissonance.
Oh.
It's like this really weird coincidence, I guess.
Like Sonic-style gameplay?
Well, there's like this trap room that has sort of a pinball element to
it. Okay.
It's very strange. Anyway.
Well, I mean, this actually also reminds me of Treasure, like a Treasure game, and not in that it's not as crazy or out there, but it does have a lot of interesting gimmicks in the stages. Like I mentioned, one stage is basically you're rolling Mario into a ball to do everything. Another stage is a board game where you're playing a board game to make blocks appear, to make power-ups appear, to do certain things.
Yeah,
it's,
I feel
it's
like
all
they, might have been playing some Gunstar Heroes before they played Wario Land.
Not every
but
stage.
You say that it's not very strange, but I actually disagree. I feel like Wario Land, one of the things that really appeals to me is that it is so weird. And it's not like...
It wasn't strange?
You said it's not as strange as a Treasure game.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say it wasn't as, you know, varied in weirdness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love the weirdness of the game.
Oh, yeah, and this game, I mean,
it has such a bizarre sound design. Like, there's this kind of scratchy warbliness to it, and there's a lot of audio clips, but they didn't try to make these clean, nice audio clips.
No.
Everything is all scratchy and
it sounds like John
distorted.
Cage helped write the music for this game
Yeah, I mean, there's one level that I really like that has this kind of, like, happy tropical ballad.
Yeah.
But then when Wario falls prey to status effects, like the music distorts and changes, and it's really just them like saying, and look at the power we have with the Game Boy Advance, let's goof around.
This was the very beginning of the WarioWare aesthetic, like playing with the sound like this. Like, one of my favorite things in a WarioWare game is WarioWare Twisted, the dog and the cat level. There's an entire baseball game being broadcast on the radio during the level. You're hearing play by play, and it's all Nintendo characters, but you can barely make it out because it's on a scratchy radio. But they did that on a Game Boy Advance. Yeah. Like an entire baseball game. I mean, it's probably only like 4 minutes or whatever, but still. Like, this is where the birth of the WarioWare weirdness happened, and even has minigames in it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like the baseball game is pretty much where WarioWare got started.
Yeah, yeah.
They said, why don't we just do a lot of these?
I mean, and the other games feel like they could be boss battles in WarioWare or whatever.
Well, and the boss battles are interesting, too, because they're not that hard to beat in most cases, but you have this really, really strict time limit.
Right,
yeah.
And you have to defeat the bosses before the time runs out, because you have treasures that you earn for, you know, based on how quickly you beat the boss, and you lose treasures as time goes on.
Yeah, and the way the bosses hurt you is by transforming you or doing something to you in some way that wastes your time. Mm-hmm. Like, I know one boss turns you into a zombie, and while you're, like, stumbling towards the light to turn back into Wario, like, he comes out of the side of the screen and laughs at you, because he's like, I just wasted your time. He's like, I don't even care about...
But then there's a shop where you can buy extra
time.
You can buy other perks with the treasure that you've uncovered.
They're all just ways to whittle down the boss health. Right. Like, if you play the mini games, you can save up coins to buy ways to make the boss fight take not as long.
Yep. Right. But one of my favorite things about the game are the treasure rooms that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
Where each level has this kind of self-contained treasure room that's very puzzly. And those are fun to solve and can be very challenging. But the strange thing is there's this old man who's also exploring the pyramid along, like, as Wario is looting the pyramid.
Yeah.
There's this old explorer trying to, like, unravel its mysteries. And all these puzzle rooms revolve around abusing the hell out of him.
Yeah,
just,
like
picking him up, kicking him, throwing him,
jumping
using
on
him to break bricks so that you can gain treasures and stuff like that. It's just so antisocial. Like, it's it really does feel like this is kind of the kind of asshole that they wanted Wario to be, but never really got across in the gameplay.
Yeah.
Now, finally, Wario can ascend to be the true asshole that we all wanted him to be.
Abuse the elderly, I guess.
Exactly.
It's funny. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I have to say that I never played Wario Land 4, but everything you're describing to me sounds awesome.
Are
I
you
want to play it right now.
A Nintendo ambassador?
It's funny, I had a 3DS when that was happening, but I never went and got my games.
You never went to your Nintendo embassy and
no.
Back then?
Did you connect?
It might have connected.
Well, if you connected online, then you should be able to download your ambassador games. So you should really
You should do it, Kat.
Yeah,
it's
probably
free if you
take
have
advantage.
An old 3DS.
One thing I noticed, and this is warping ahead in time 12 years, is that you were mentioning this is Wario at his baddest, like throwing around an old man and using him to get money. In Game of Wario, which I reviewed recently, and I know Jeremy played it as well, there are like disclaimers every time there's antisocial behavior on the screen. It's like, don't do this at home, kids. Don't be like Wario.
Don't really throw garlic at robots.
Yeah, yeah. Just like, what? I was mentioning the cat. Like, kids don't need the idea of staying up past their bedtime implanted in their head. They already have that idea from like childbirth. Like, I don't want to sleep. I want to stay up and have fun. But when you play...
That's what rearing a child is all about for the first 3 years.
Yeah.
What's coming across to me about Wario Land 4 is that there's just so much to do, and it's the antithesis of repetitive. They're just throwing so much out at you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's really well done from what I'm able to understand about the game.
I do miss the big world and the immortality of Wario Land 2 and 3, but I do like how everything is so focused and polished, even though it's not as big of a game. And I think it's one of the Game Boy Advance's best-looking games, and it came out in the first year
of the system. It's kind of the Super Castlevania 4 of the Game Boy Advance.
That's good.
It does all these technical tricks and has really cool graphics and music, and nothing else quite did that same style. Nothing else quite matched it on all those levels.
Yeah.
Jeremy, well, you've talked about this before, but the GBA itself was kind of a renaissance for 2D games in general.
Yeah, and
we saw so many great games.
Like I was saying, in 2000, it felt like 2D was on the way out and no one cared, and that was a joke. Like, oh, 2D games, whatever. It would just assume that 3D would be everything from now on. But now, with iPhones and, you know, at our fingertips, everything is 2D and we're okay now.
Well,
Apple
just announced that they're releasing an SDK for
like controllers.
For everyone to use.
Yeah.
A game design for creating 2D games
that
anyone can pick up and make use of.
That's really awesome.
And yeah, because of the implementation of the controller support in iOS 7, I think there could actually be like a legitimate renaissance of 2D platformers and that style of game that are actually playable.
That could be good
on iPhones.
I hope
being really frustrating and horrible.
I do hope the controllers are cheaper, because I saw a controller at E3 for an iPhone, and they were talking about how, you know, it's going to be part of the OS just to have controller support. And I was like, how much is the controller? Because I was playing with it. And they're like, oh, $99.
Really? Well,
and I walked away.
Well, it depends on what they were doing with it, because they all like to make little cases for it.
It was a case that snapped onto the phone, but still, it didn't seem like it was worth $100.
Yeah, well,
I'd rather just not buy iPhone games.
The market will solve that.
I hope so.
Yeah, but now it's like, you know, the big complaint with 2D games is like, oh, why isn't that 99 cents?
That's so true.
Hopefully we get over that hump as well.
I hope so too. I shot birds for 99 cents.
Yeah. I think every time I see a game like XCOM come out for like $20 and people complain, I don't know, like, I feel like every time we gain a little bit of foothold back toward reestablishing the value of video games.
It didn't stop people buying The World Ends With You on iPad.
That's true.
It's one of the best-selling games from what I can see. Or at least it's always charting, so. And that game has Square Enix tax.
It does.
I have to say, I never actually played Wario Land 3, which is what I was going to say. And so to me, it sounds like with 4, it's just like they took 3 and just like squashed it a bit, so it's a little bit more.
I feel 4 is more like a lot more like 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in terms of like how we were talking about how it seems like there is a lot of stuff to do in 4, but it's not like add to a scale as it was in 3.
Right. It's super focused. I mean, that's because it was more expensive to make assets for the Game Boy Advance, and I think a lot of those assets were just sitting around from 2 to use in 3. So
yeah, probably.
So let's move on to our spinoffs, and we're going a little later than I thought we would, but we can go through this in like 10 minutes. Yeah, it's Retronauts, so we have to drone on forever. So we have...
Well, that's too bad, because I want to talk more about these.
We can. We just have to talk faster. So, Virtual Boy Wario Land. That's the name of the game. I thought it was just called Wario Land, and they just used the branding to differentiate it.
Yeah.
But no, released just a year after Wario Land 1, Super Mario Land 3. And it doesn't really do a whole lot more with the design. It's basically just Wario Land 1, but with Virtual Boy sort of gimmicks. Like, you jump to the background and foreground of levels instead of just, you know, going to different rooms.
It's Wario Land meets King of Fighters.
That's weird.
Meets Mutant Muds.
So, I mean, I assume you can emulate this. Is that true? I mean, are there Virtual Boy emulators? I want to play this, but I didn't.
I have actually played it, and unfortunately the system itself is so distracting I could not enjoy it.
Just like the...
I cannot look into those goggles for a long period of time because it makes my eyes hurt.
Well, I did, and I beat that game.
What do you think, Ray? Tell us all about it.
I was there for the Virtual Boy launch, and so I made sure to get Wario Land because it is like the only real game.
That's
for
what
that
it feels like. Yeah,
and yeah, it
not
is
the tennis game.
No, I'm afraid not.
What about Nestor's Funky Bowling?
Nah, close, close second, close, close second and third.
You know, we're, I think we just named every title now.
We did. Waterworld. There we go.
Oh, yuck.
Right. So yeah, it doesn't really do anything new compared to the first game, but it's still good.
Yeah, there's one new hat in the Malibu Stacy's new hat. I guess you can combine the eagle hat and dragon hat, so it can do, you can fly and shoot fire. That's the only thing it brought to the table.
Yeah, that's not bad.
I'm sure it was good, and I'm sure there could be a way to emulate this, and maybe bring it out again. But I don't think Nintendo will ever do it.
Well,
I think they
Nintendo,
just
want to. One of Nintendo's investors did ask Mr. Iwata in their most recent earnings call a couple of days ago if we would see Virtual Boy games on 3DS, and they said, well, "We don't announce products at these things." But we'll keep it in mind. Who knows what that even means?
Yeah,
but
that means no.
They said it wasn't very successful, but it does seem people do have some fondness for it. So.
Yeah, I'd like to play those games because I never could.
If nothing else.
Yeah,
Nintendo did kind of go back and retcon the Virtual Boy when they were launching the 3DS. It went from being like the thing no one ever talked about to them saying, well, you know, that wasn't really a game system. We were making a toy. And as far as toys go, you know, it sold 100,000 units. That's pretty good. Or however many units.
We had this toy maker named Yokoi. I don't know if you ever heard of him, but he made that thing.
Some nobody.
Yeah.
So they did kind of, I think, to strengthen their claim on 3D because for some reason they thought 3D was a good idea. Went back and cited the Virtual Boy and you know, a 3D Hot Rally or whatever for Famicom. And the other things they had done in 3D back, you know, throughout history to say, no, we have a legitimate claim to this. This is our gimmick.
Well, the 3DS's 3D still makes my eyes melt, so mission accomplished, I guess. You're not just blinding children, you're also blinding adults, Nintendo.
Yeah, well, it's not as bad as the Virtual Boy. I'll give it that.
Oh, I God.
Mean, you do need to really not have too bad eyes. Too bad of I. Yeah.
So let's move on to our next game, which I recently just played. Unfortunately, it is Wario World, released June 23rd, 2003, made by Treasure. I feel like Treasure was not at their on their game in the aughts. I feel like a lot of garbage came out of Treasure.
Yeah, it's really
and they were having.
Bad.
I mean, what do they do now?
They haven't done anything in a while.
They haven't done anything in a while.
The last thing they did was Sin and Punishment, which was great. But
this is a good game. Star Successor or whatever. Yeah. Okay,
that was a good game.
Didn't they remake Raiden Silvergun? Was that?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, they ported Radiant Silvergun and Guardian Heroes to 360
but
Live Arcade.
This game, I don't have much to say about it. I do want to at least talk about it, though. It is basically the best way to describe it is a 3D platformer from 10 years ago. The main gimmick of this game is like, aren't cameras awful in these types of games? Because the gimmick, I guess if you want to call it that, is like you have to make jumps, but they don't give you the visual information you need to make those jumps. So the whole game is about trying jumps over and over and over until you actually find where you're supposed to jump.
Yeah.
And it's not fun. And it has puzzle rooms like in Mario Land 4, but they feel like the weird, abandoned, like, half-brother locked up in the attic version of that because the whole...
Sloth.
The entire point of it is to manipulate the camera in order to figure out, like, where the hell you're supposed to go. So it kind of feels like that weird isometric maze in Mario RPG, if that's not the most obscure reference ever. It's like finding your way through this geometry that doesn't really make a lot of sense because it's being portrayed on a flat screen and you're given limited camera options.
The a lot of the bonus rooms in Mario 3D Land did that.
Right. I did mark that down. It feels like that, but in a very terrible
way.
Yeah.
I don't understand why anyone back then would have played what was it called? The treasure game for PS2 with the...
Stretch Panic?
Yeah, Stretch Panic.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why anyone would have played that and said, hey, you guys really have a great grasp on 3D game design. Could you make our franchise game for us?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a weird choice.
I'd be like, hey, this is a great prototype. Oh, it's a game. Can you leave? Can you leave our office, please?
Like, 3D was just... It's never been Treasure's strength.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so the fact that they brought Treasure on to do a 3D... iteration on a series that otherwise would have played so well to their strengths.
Yeah.
Just seems like a totally boneheaded missed opportunity.
And in the transition to, I guess, relatively primitive 3D graphics, this does not look like a GameCube game. It looks like a Dreamcast game. Wario loses a lot of his edge. The enemies just get less detailed, less interesting. They're just kind of dopey, muppety-looking things. They don't have the attraction that, like, the really crazy 2D graphics had with Wario.
There is no edge to this game.
Yeah, it's
in
like
any respect.
It's such a doofy, goofy, pointless platformer that
it's
I don't.
Same edge of Cross Edge.
What's that? Okay, I didn't get the joke. But did anyone play this game? But I just played it like a week ago because I brought home a copy a zillion years ago, and Ray's shaking his head, and he's going into
fits. Yeah, I got it cheap, thankfully. But yeah, it was just like, it's short, too. I mean, that's the thing we should say. It's just so boring and also so short. It's like, what happened?
Yeah.
I didn't feel anything. What's going on?
Did the game start yet?
Yeah. It's like, God, yeah. So all the same complaints that we've said already.
I think we're ready to move on from Wario World, right? Yeah. Forget about everyone. It's not worth your time. Mm-hmm. So next we have Wario, Master of Disguise. That came out in March 5th, 2007. And all I know about this game is what I read of Jeremy's review yesterday. And it sounds like the worst game.
Probably know more about the game than I do because
those memories are fresher.
I have wiped it from my memory.
Okay, that's for the best.
I remember that it was not good and that you had disguises and it was bad.
I should point out in 2003 with Wario World, that's where the outsourcing of Wario began and that's where his problems start. When he leaves the clutches of R&D1, maybe the loving hands, not clutches.
Well, I think R&D1 wanted to do the WarioWare games.
Yeah, that's true.
And the WarioWare games were great, and I'm glad that they did those. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo, I think, still wanted like traditional Wario games.
Yeah.
So they started to outsource them, and outsourced Nintendo platformers are never good.
Yeah, we just talked about Yoshi's Island DS. So bad.
Well,
so
I like Super Princess Peach, but that's the weird exception.
Yeah. But this game, I can tell you what I read of Jeremy's review. You play as Wario. Instead of touching enemies to get powers, this was one of those games that came out for the DS. That's like, we have to use a damn touchscreen for a reason that you couldn't necessarily do with a button, although you obviously always could. So in this case, it's like Wario has four different forms, and you draw a symbol on the touchscreen when you want to change into that form. Oh, Jeremy's remembering now. He's having flashbacks. Somebody hold him down. Jeremy, also get
Suzak.
Come closer to the mic, Jeremy.
Go to hell, Suzak.
Yeah, Suzak. Did I mention that? Or did you just pull that up from the depths of your memory? Okay. Suzak, they developed some F-Zero Game Boy Advance games, and I think they've just fallen off the map.
No, actually, they're not that bad. They also made the GG Series DSiWare games, and that seems to be more their wheelhouse because they're just a very tiny, simple, focused games.
Like
and
30
actually,
seconds.
Yeah, they're not that bad either. Mm. So, I mean, they have done stuff, and I think they also made like the Domo-kun games.
Okay, they just didn't get a good grip on Wario. And like what I've watched of this game on YouTube, and I don't want to try it because it looks really bad. Mm. There's a lot of talking. There's a lot of dialogue, and it's very, very slow. And that's not what I mean. Wario's a little more meticulous when you play the game, but it never was this slow as what I watched.
Yeah, I don't understand the compulsion that publishers or developers have to just cram a simple game like this full of endless chatty text.
Exactly, yeah.
Because you look at a game like Wario Land 4, and there is a narrative that kind of happens throughout the game, and like persistent elements and kind of a story that evolves, but no one ever says anything. It's all told through rah, 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 rah.
Yeah, weird rah, rah, rah. Fake Italian.
Yeah. Like, that's fine. That's all I need.
Yeah.
I know Wario's an asshole who beats up old men and wants to steal everything.
I mean,
keeps making things blow up. And that's all I need to know.
I saw the evils of modern game design, like, reaching to grab Mario by, like, the throat with this game. Because in Wario Land 1, 2, 3, 4, there's no, like, hey, Wario, this is how you change forms. This is how you do this. I'll help you out. But in this game has, like, a knobby-type character. And, like, the first, like, 20 minutes I watch is, like, Mario being explained everything. Like, here's how you do this. Here's how you do that. It's right. Like, I feel like... Like the other games did that all so naturally and so great, probably because they're R&D1 stuff, and I mean they are the dudes that did Metroid. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, and that game was all about teaching you through the environment, and this game did not do that. So go to hell, Master of Disguise. I actually forgot the name. I had to look at it again.
Yeah.
To paraphrase Jack Kerouac, I saw the best games of my generation destroyed by focus groups, starving, hysterical.
It's all the kids' fault. Come on, kids, get together. So. Our last game we're going to be talking about today is Wario Land Shake It. This game came out September 22nd, 2008. It's developed by Good Feel, and they did Kirby's Epic Yarn. And it's a really good-looking game, I guess. Mm-hmm. Who did the Studio 4C?
Production IG.
Production IG, right. So they have really great anime style graphics, although it's strange the game is only in 4:3 aspect ratio. I don't get that,
yeah,
but okay.
That's a
strange choice.
Yeah.
I guess they thought people with Wiis didn't have those dang old fancy TVs. But Shake It really just plays out like a watered-down version of Wario Land 4, which is why I didn't like it. Even though the graphics are great, I just found the level design to be really lacking. And it does something that I hate, where it's like the game will show you, oh, you missed something, and you can't get it unless you jump back into the stage again from the beginning. And I feel like Wario Land 4 rarely did that. In this game, from the very beginning, it was showing me things that I couldn't get unless I came back, because I had to have known it was there to find it in the first place. And I really hate that.
Yeah, it wasn't based around exploration so much as... doing things in the right sequence, and if you do them in the wrong sequence without, you know, knowing what that sequence was, then, oh, sorry, try again.
This comes back to my complaint that I made earlier about, I feel like level design's gotten lost in 2D platformers. It's like people have forgotten how to do really compelling levels, mm-hmm. and you see that a lot in the DS versions of New Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're the worst,
because there's,
but, yeah.
There's more to a 2D platformer than a really nice 2D art style. You actually have to have compelling level design.
Yeah, like this game, it looks great, but it does not, you know, I mean, the technology is there, and I wish more 2D games looked like this, but the design is not there. And I thought, Ray, did you feel a little differently about this game than the rest of us?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Just to preface that.
Should we broach the subject?
I know internally, you know, back when I worked with Jeremy, you know, I sort of gave him a little bit of guff for rating it too low, but it's not like I thought it was amazing or anything. I do pretty much agree that, yeah, it has some weak parts to it, but I don't think it's the worst Wario Land or anything, and I do think it's a decent enough compliment to Wario Land 4, but again, yeah, I'm going to concede that there are some problems with it.
I mean, my big complaint about it is that Wario platformers to that point had always kind of just, you know, thrown out the rules and tried new things.
Yeah.
And this was a slavish impersonation of Wario Land 4. It missed that kernel of unpredictability.
Right. It was like a Wario pod person that had shown up in Wario Land 4's place.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fine tribute, but
yeah.
It just, you know, it wasn't pushing anything forward.
Also, it had a really dumb use of motion controls in that you had to use them to aim and also to butt stomp and maybe a few other things. Yeah. And I found that just like, it's not like, necessary.
It's like the touch stuff in Master Disguise.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
It made the boss battles really difficult, like not in a good way.
Yeah. So, Wario Land, shake it. Shake this! Okay, so...
I thought the music was okay, too.
Music was okay. I liked it. Yeah. No problems there. So, our final questions for today, and I know Kat was brought this up, and like in the wake of me playing these Wario Land games back-to-back-to-back-to-back, I have a feeling that, like, why... And like I said, this is not just nostalgia speaking. Most of these games were new to me. Like, I feel like platformers these days are lacking, at least Nintendo platformers. Like, how do we feel about the state of Nintendo platformers? I'm just going to say right out, there are too many new Super Mario Brothers games. They need to stop it immediately. I feel like they've already... Luigi U was cute. It was a cute twist on it, but I think they need to move on because...
New Super Mario Brothers U was a good game.
Yeah. I mean,
it was great.
They're all good games, but if there were 5 Mario Brothers 3s or 5 Mario Worlds, like, in the early 90s, I think we would not hold them in as high as regard.
I think their mistake was just releasing New Super Mario Brothers U too soon after New Super Mario Brothers 2.
This seemed to be like just a buildup of new Mario games.
Yeah, I mean, like 4 months apart is not enough space.
Yeah.
If they had waited until this fall to release that and come out with something different as a launch title for Wii U, it'd have been fine. I don't think people would be complaining.
I think in my case, the problem with the current crop of Marios is, first of all, I hate the graphic design. I don't like the 2.5D look. I don't like the music at all, and I don't like the pace.
I'm getting sick of the singing characters. Can we stop that?
All of these things, when I look at Mario Land, all of it comes together in a way. The music, the art design.
Could you get a little closer to your mic? Sorry.
Everything comes together for me in Mario World.
Yeah.
I mean, the music, the art design, the really interesting levels where I'm constantly searching around for hidden exits and everything, and all of that has gotten lost in the current Mario games, unfortunately. And I know that Jeremy's going to strongly disagree with me, but I really enjoyed Rayman Origins. It's Sonic done right to some extent. It has great pacing. It looks great. The music's great. It has a great aesthetic. I'm playing it. I'm laughing. I'm having a good time. I'm playing Mario, and it feels like it's gone almost generic.
Rayman is going for something. I feel like the new Mario games have kind of settled into something that I'm not particularly happy with. Just the design, just the game looks. I don't know.
Feels rote at this point. No. Nintendo's putting another one out and going, well, this will sell.
Right. I mean, there are some touches like, hey, that Starry Night background in that one area, new Mario U is great. Like
Mario U looks great because it's in HD.
Can we get like an entire game full of like impressionistic backgrounds or weird designs like that? Like sort of what Skyward Sword kind of tried to do, but didn't really pull off that well.
Kind of hit its apex.
Yoshi's New Island.
Oh, God. Break.
There you go.
Break, yeah.
Hey, also, good news. They're not making another new Mario, but instead they're making another 3D
Mario
Land.
3D Land World universe.
World, not just a land.
Yeah, so, I mean, how do we feel? I feel like Nintendo needs another Wario Land, not necessarily a new Wario Land game, but something...
Something to shake it up?
Something to as a reaction to what's been going on with them lately. And I feel like you said, Jeremy, I feel like maybe R&D1 was sort of making fun of EAD. Maybe they were the more uptight or more conservative ones, and R&D1 was like, let's make fun of Mario in our own way. I don't know.
What is R&D1 even doing these days?
They are now...
They have a different name.
Yeah, they're now SPD, which is... and they... Same guys, like... Who are the main guys in that? The Metroid guy, Sakamoto... Goto, something like that. I don't know. All I know is that basically they are the remnants of what R&D1 used to be after a lot of change ups.
What's their most recent project, the Metroid for the Wii that they did with Team Ninja?
No,
they've done some more recent
Game
things.
And Wario.
And I think they've done a lot of
that game was terrible.
Yeah, yes.
Haven't they done a lot of the Wii or the 3DSware stuff? Wasn't Dylan's Rolling Monster one of theirs?
No. That was actually made by an outsourced company that I can't remember right
Vanpool.
Now. Vanpool, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. But I love that game. Unrelated note.
I think it's just kind of odd how quickly Wario was sort of not quite banned, but just taken out of the Mario universe after the Wario Land games.
Yeah.
Where is he now? He just shows up in Mario Party. And last
Smash
time you
Brothers.
You could play as him in Super Mario 64 DS.
I guess, yeah, that's true. If you want to do that, get Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Get out your thumb nub.
Oh,
it's time to play.
And Yoshi's Island DS.
I mean, he's around. It's just he has his own thing.
He's a guest star. He's a Mega Man in his
own.
But
it's now his own thing is kind of getting a bit long in the tooth.
Yeah. Even if Game of Wario was better, I think I'm done with WarioWare. I would just want them to do something different. And that I think that was Rhythm Heaven, basically. That was what they moved on to. The last question I have. And this is sort of a loaded question because I feel the answer is yes. And has the indie gaming space copped Wario's act? Because I guess the joke, and I think it was Marty at one of maybe Jose, the joke about it's a new indie game. It's a platformer with a twist or whatever. And that was the way you described every indie game. I mean, it's being reductive, but...
Kind of. But you do see a lot of that really great level design you associate with old Nintendo games in the best indie games. Not all. There are some pretty crappy indie games. But... I'm really, really enamored with 1001 Spikes, which is kind of a riff on the whole Famicom, insanely hard, spelunker, Atlantis no Nazo kind of game where it just constantly kills you over and over again. But each level is set up as just this perfectly constructed trap full of spikes and blow darts and scorpions and God knows what else,
right.
Where... Not only are you constantly in peril of being killed, but as you respond to the overt threats, you're very likely to blunder into something that was hidden. And it doesn't feel cheap or unfair because you have 1,001 lives. It feels like, oh, they got me. It's like you're playing this game almost with the game developer, with the level designer. And it's almost like a cat and mouse thing where he's clearly watched how people play the game and he's adjusted traps and other hazards to respond to people's natural instincts when playing the game and force them to not go the easy route and not go with their natural instincts but to think twice about everything they do. And it's really great. I mean, I realize my experience playing the game hasn't been typical because both times I've played it have been at events,
right,
PAX and then E3. And both times the game's designer was standing behind me laughing at every death.
That is not an experience most people will have.
So
unless
like,
he really gets around.
But I mean, he totally gets a kick out of watching people stumble into these traps that he's created and doing exactly the things that he expected them to do. And, so as a result, this game is really great. It's really fun. It just, I don't know. It takes 30 years of platform design and learning and cliches and expectations and sort of flips them on their side.
Yeah.
And I like it in the same way that I like Mega Man 9, which kind of took all the things that you had come to take for granted about Mega Man and turned them against you. When games kind of do this almost postmodern thing where they turn everything that you've learned and come to expect against you. It's
Would you
a lot
think
of fun.
Super Meat Boy is the same idea?
Yes.
Never really played that.
Okay,
it's really hard.
Yeah, it's all about gotcha moments, but I mean, you respect it because I mean,
as long
there.
As there's not too much of a penalty for being gotten.
No,
gotcha is fun.
Most stages are 8 seconds long.
Yeah,
and you just have to learn them. Kat and Ray, what do you think about indie gaming space? Do you think they are where the new Wario type games are going to be found now that Nintendo's sort of settling
well,
for
I
now?
Mean, first of all, you have to, there are so many indie games now that you have to stand out in some way.
Yeah.
And you stand out in the indie gaming space by being innovative.
Yeah.
I would also say it's not just Nintendo settling. Anyone
everyone
invests
is.
More than like $100,000 into a video game is afraid,
right.
terrified
I mean,
of not hitting their profits,
yeah.
so they make it as safe as possible.
I don't want to just pick on Nintendo. I mean, everyone is being more conservative
there's
these
days.
There's
a game called Badlands that I really enjoy on the iPad. Great art styles, kind of reminiscent of a game that came out a couple of years ago on XBLA.
Yeah, and I think, called. I mean, you mentioned art style, and I think that is how yeah. Wario Land is so weird looking. Like, indie games, a lot of them just stand out for how strange they look. I don't think Hotline Miami would be as, you know, people would care about it as much if it didn't have the trippy acid trip visuals and the cool soundtrack. And just, I mean, the graphics are technically bad, but they're presented in an interesting way.
And you just don't see many major game studios making platforms anymore.
That's true, yeah.
So indie developers have taken over the retro space and nostalgia space. The old game stuff, genres, like platformers. So that's their province now, and I'm okay with that because
that's
they're more willing to take risks.
I like it. Before we wrap up, Ray, any thoughts on this? Indie games? And
well, I can tell you I'm pretty sick of puzzle platformers right now.
That
and
too.
Like, there's...
I just played four of them. No, go ahead.
No, I mean, there's nothing really like Wario Land right now.
That is true,
that's
yeah.
That's also, like, you know, notable out there in the space. I mean... Yeah, everything now is just like, oh, here's an obstacle. How are you going to get over it? I mean, that's a puzzle platformer now. It's not like Wario Land where you can also go and find stuff and contribute to your overall goal.
Right, right. There's it's more about exploration,
and
too.
And the puzzles are more subtle in that way, too.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
I should mention that Way Forward is still around.
That's true. There is still hope.
They're making Mighty Switch Forces, which
they are.
Is a puzzle platformer.
They haven't done anything Wario-esque, but...
No.
They did such a good job ripping off Zelda 2 for Adventure Time that mm-hmm. I feel
maybe,
like they could probably do a pretty good Wario
remake. Maybe the regular show game they're doing is going to be the Wario game.
I look forward to the remake of DuckTales.
Yeah. So can we all say before we shut down here that Wario Land is awesome and you should go play the games in any way you can?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think we're all in agreement of that.
I'm going to go hunt down a copy of Wario Land 4 now.
You should.
I have an extra.
Oh,
yours.
Rock.
Also, you should be able to download it, remember?
I'm going to try.
If you
find
can't download
your certificate.
It, you can have my old copy.
Woo.
Sweet. Now you must swear to it since it's captured on audio. So let's wrap up here. We are at Retronauts on Twitter, RetroNauts. I'm Bob Servo on Twitter, BobServo. How about you guys? How can we contact you if we want to harass you for any reason?
I'm on Twitter, RDBAAA. You can also check out my site with my game history magazine, scroll.vg.
Cool.
I have a blog called telebunny.net. I'm on Twitter as GameSpite. I think you can also still get to my website from GameSpite.net, but there's some weird stuff going on domain. And, of course, I pay my rent by writing for USGamer.net. Not Us Gamer, it's US Gamer, as in America.
What is America. Sandra Bullock playing today?
That's a secret.
Angry Birds. Kat, what's up? How can we get a hold of you?
Starting next week, I'm going to be... making my debut on US Gamer. I look forward to it. And I'm not as a regular staff, just freelancing, and I'm on Twitter as the_Kappa.
Cool. I forgot to mention, I also write for Joystick, so head on over there. They post articles about me occasionally. So, plugs. Let's get that out of the way. You can go to our blog, retronauts.com. We have a Twitter account, twitter.com/retronauts. We're also on Facebook as Retronauts. Yes, I'm doing all of these. Tumblr is Retronauts. SoundCloud is Retronauts. We're on Twitch as Retronauts. Basically, any social outlet
YouTube.
You can find. YouTube is Retronauts.
On our channel, but we're there.
Yeah, we're going to eventually upload episodes
look
to that.
Look for Retronauts brand cereal and all licensed products.
With Marshmallow Braze.
That don't exist.
Oat Jeremy's.
Retronauts.
And Brand Bob's. And when we eventually hit the iTunes Music Store, which should be around the time this episode hits, please review us if you want to let us know how we're doing and you want to support the show in that way. But we're going to have a new feed, new reviews, new ratings. So please jump on over there. Give us 5 stars if you like us, maybe 4 if you don't. And write us a good review. Let us know how we're doing. We appreciate
it. If you give us a bad review, just keep it to yourself.
You can just mail that to me personally and I will dispose of it for you. So... In closing, we'll see you guys next week with a fun mini episode that I'm looking forward to doing in a few minutes. Later. I'm a Wario. I'm gonna win.